Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm David.
And we're the MSA Crusaders. Hello, and welcome to another episode of MSA Crusaders. We are here today with Gary. How
Hey,
are you
Gary.
doing today?
Hey, I'm doing okay today. How are y'all doing?
Doing all right. Today's a pretty good day. So glad you came to talk to David and I. Thank you for giving us some time out of your busy day.
I appreciate you all, doing this. This is an awesome thing for y'all to do because I think it's essential for people who have MSA to hear other people talk about their symptoms because they're all so different, So this is good stuff, I think. So I really appreciate you all doing that. I know it's a lot of work too.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
The public doesn't know this, Gary, but we also, for everyone, every guest we have, we give out free coupons for free shots of vodka on the show.
Oh,
So, that's probably why,
okay, I'll take two, please.
Oh, David, you're a finesse. So, Gary, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I worked with a company called RSM, which was like the fifth largest accounting and professional services firm out there. Did business development for them for several years. And then before that, I worked for a company called Crowe, which was also that was the eighth largest accounting and professional photo services firm. And before that, I had my own business I ran for about 20 some years and then sold a part of that. So that's what I've been doing all my life is just working, really hard. And probably around 2021, I'm going to say, I started feeling just really tired and exhausted. And I ended up going into the hospital because I felt so bad, and they said I needed to go see a neurologist. My neurologist, he thought I had MSA hyphen P Parkinsonism, the first time he ever saw me, because he just thought, from what I was describing, how quickly everything was coming on. So he ended up doing a bunch of tests and everything, and about, in April, he diagnosed me officially with MSA hyphen P.
What kind of symptoms were you having when you went to get diagnosed?
I was having the real exhaustion. I had a strain, like, the gait issue, walking issue. And it just all kind of happened so quickly. I think that was why he was, suspecting it was MSA hyphen P instead of just Parkinson's, But those were my main issues. I had also like a brain fogginess as well. Can't really describe that very well, but just because it's just like, it's just like a brain fogginess. I don't know how to describe it,
I would describe it as I'm disassociated. That's all I say. I feel like I'm in dreamland, kind of.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, that's interesting because, MSA, which doesn't matter if P or C, it definitely moves much faster than Parkinson's. So seeing the rate of progression of your early symptoms is like the key to saying, hey, this isn't Parkinson's at all,
Well, that's kind of what he was thinking too. He's a great guy. He's down here at Emory. So he's a great neurologist.
Where do you live at? What's
I live in the
the state?
Atlanta, Atlanta, Georgia area. I live
And
about
Georgia.
45 minutes north of Atlanta in a place
Oh,
called Canton, Georgia, northwest of Atlanta.
good. Got that red clay down there.
Oh yeah, we got a lot of clay and peaches too, so
Yeah, can't stand the Peach Pass. Can they name your toll anything else than Peach Pass? I mean,
yeah.
Have you always lived there in the area?
Well, I've lived here for the last about 30 years, I guess. Yeah. So we lived in Augusta, Georgia for a little bit too. I worked at Georgia Tech up there and worked for the Medical College of Georgia as well. So I did research work with people that were, they'd develop some new technology and they'd have a way to, we'd help them try to commercialize that either through licensing it to a larger company or just selling it to a bigger company or something like that.
And Gary, tell us what motivated you to get started in a clinical trial.
Well, I knew that, according to the statistics, I don't have much of a life left, and so I just figured I'd just try something that looks kind of like a big thing, I guess, is what I was thinking. I didn't want anything that was going to help me, with some of the minor issues. I wanted something that might be, a fix of some sort. So I decided to get into this MSA research trial for AskBio, which is a GDNF, which is a glial cell line Near perfect factor.
That's the one that's technically a surgery, correct?
Right, yeah. You can say that.
It's in your brain, basically. They put it into your putamen with a little virus called AAB2, which stands for adeno-associated virus stereotype 2. And that goes into your brain, and it actually delivers the gene to your brain, and that's used in your brain to help you keep, you know, your brain cells from losing the dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to help you with that, and then they're saying that you know, their therapy hopefully is going to provide, you know, promote the survival and improvements, you know, in motor skills and motor abilities and stuff like that.
Have you now? You seem very versed in the clinical trial, which is outstanding. That somebody technically, for the most part, as much as we can speak about it. Have you done the research into the prior GDNF tests they've done before this? Because this GDNF has been going on for about 12 years in different forms and shapes and sizes. Have you looked into that?
I have, yes.
Because the last result they had, which is why they moved to phase one on this, is I was reading the white pages from the government, and they were trying it on NHPs, or non-human primates, rats, for, you know, for all practical purposes.
Right.
And they improved completely, dramatically, unequivocally. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, not everything for rats and stuff like testing for vaccines or whatever works on humans, but this is different because it's your own DNA's gene. They're going to modify a synthetic one to take the place of it, and they've done that before with a lot of other illnesses. So I'm like you, I wonder when it's going to hit home, not just slow it down, but have a big impact. And after reading those studies that they had just in the last couple of years with the NHP primates and the success they have, I was very optimistic. You know, I'm a realist, but this is probably the only thing out there in MSA that I'm optimistic about, for sure.
Yeah, that's true. That's the way I looked at it as well. I also talked about it with both of my neurologists, and they both thought it was very interesting. So when I talked to them at first, I was thinking they're going to say, well, I don't like the surgery thing at all. You know, it's just not going to be good for you. So. But they were very interested in the technology, and they liked it. So they both liked it.
But you said it. One thing you hear over and over is MSA patients don't react well to anesthesia. So with that said, did you react well to anesthesia?
No, I didn't. I was out for like 7.5 hours on the operating table.
And you're supposed to be out for a minimum 6 hours for a surgery, and they say it's between 7 and 9 hours in anesthesia. Yeah. How were you when you came out of it?
I felt pretty bad once I got out, and then I still feel kind of bad even after, you know, a couple months of going through this. They're saying that can take months for you to get through the anesthesia issue. So
yeah, I think, I mean, you have brain surgery, traumatic to your brain.
Yeah, it really was. It was more than I expected too. I didn't expect to feel this bad, you know, after the surgery. I had things where I've been out before, and it didn't really affect me that like that, you know.
Do you think about it when you're in a wreck or anything, and you get shifted around just from whiplash? Your brain can be really foggy then for a while just from whiplash.
That's true. So, absolutely true. So I'm hopeful that's going to go. I feel a little bit better, you know, kind of like every day almost, you know, but I know that, you know, I still have some mobility issues, but I can see other symptoms that are starting to change a little bit for some reason. So I may have gotten the real thing. You never know. You know, I have a 2/3 chance of getting the real thing and 1/3 chance.
Of not. Yeah, I'll take 66% over 50 any day.
I would say I'm very envious of both of you to be able to take that chance. You know, me going down there trying to get it. And it's turned down because I was too progressed. So I might just see what happens and how it works out for you too.
Yep. David, you're doing it too, right?
Yes, scheduled for the 17th of January, correct.
That's awesome.
So those are your hopes and your expectations to hope that it turns this around for, I'm gonna say, your symptoms and whatnot. How about your intervention from the trial? How has that impacted your quality of life so far?
What do you mean the intervention exactly?
your the treatment that you had, because you alluded to it slightly that you believe you see some things that are improving that could be from it, but you're not sure yet.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to put any words in your mouth here, Gary.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah.
I mean, because it really is not a treatment. It was free intervention of surgery. Yeah.
So let's be technical here, Gary. Are they improving because of the way the anesthesia knocked you down and you're just getting back those pre-anesthesia things, or is it actually before the surgery things getting better?
I think it's before the surgery things, you know, are getting a little bit better.
That's great. That's absolutely phenomenal.
As far as your symptoms from MSA, you can tell that you feel like they're getting better. That's what I was just saying.
I think so, yeah. I think so, but I still don't even know yet. You know,
I'll be so excited for you.
Thank you, Daisy. I really appreciate that.
Of course. So what kind of challenges that you might have had before the surgery or improvements are you noticing?
Well, before the surgery, I just had, you know, starting to get some mobility issues, you know, they were kind of kicking in. And that's actually gotten a little bit worse after the surgery, which I think is related to the anesthesia thing, you know.
You had a couple of falls, didn't you? I mean, those kind of challenges is what I'm talking about, like falls and.
Yeah, I had one bad fall, right? It was like about 2 weeks after I got back home, I fell. And I hit my head up against the wall and it just like cut it real bad, you know, so I had to go in and get 10 stitches for that.
Oh, gosh.
It was right in the area where they had done the surgery too. Fortunately, you know, I didn't hit anything. It was just awesome. But it was okay. I mean, you know, my wife said she thought I had a concussion as well, but I didn't think I really did. But I mean, I felt okay. You know, it just was a little bit painful when they did the stitches and all, but that was it, you know.
Man, that must have been scary for her, I can imagine. And for yourself, too, to think about you just had surgery on your brain, then you fall and hit your head.
Yeah, no. That was like the last thing I was expecting, for sure.
We're going to get you a Indianapolis Colts football helmet to wear.
Yeah.
That might help, actually.
Like, man, you could have really done a big number on yourself and messed yourself up. Falling and hitting your head like that.
It was okay, you know, and I'm over it. I've been over it. So they took the stitches out about a week or so afterwards, you know, which was normal, you know, so it was good. I didn't see any issues with it. No infections or anything like that, which was awesome.
That's good.
Yeah. How long were you in the hospital for the surgery? They stayed 3 to 5.
I stayed there for 2 days.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, too, you've had some post-ops appointments.
Yes, I have, yes.
And how have those gone?
They just, you know, ask you questions, how you feeling and stuff like that, you know, and they want to make sure there isn't any issues, you know, with your surgery or anything like that, which, you know, I didn't have any issues with that. So it was, you know, I've been up to, I saw the surgeons like about, you know, about 2 weeks or a week or so afterwards. That was good. And then I saw the folks up at the Ask Bio like about a month after. So I'm going back up there again for my second post-op in January.
Is that Detroit?
Yeah, it's up in Detroit. Yep.
I missed you by one day last time, didn't I?
You did. I know. That was funny. I was kind of regretting that. I didn't really hang out there for a little bit longer or something. I wanted to see you, but, you know, it couldn't work out. So.
Yeah, they speak about the patients when I'm up there because we were gossiping about Daisy. It's, you know, they're like, hey, you're patient number 3. I was like, well, I already knew who patient number 1 was. And that was actually yourself, from what I'm told by them. So
yeah.
I don't know who the number 2 is, but 2 people so far from Detroit have had out of 9. 2 out of 9 in the entire country. So there's one other office clinical going on for the same GNF in the West Coast. And I think that's 12 people. But think about that. I mean, 2 of us are right here out of 21 in the whole country.
Yep.
With MSA with a surgery. Like, that's crazy. It's unbelievable.
It really is. Yeah. I'm just so thankful I was able to get into it, you know.
I want to join the party.
You can. You keep doing your surgery or your exercise and stepping in the water aquatics. You can.
I've got the doctor fighting for me for that right to try. On the other clinical trial, I got declined for. So hopefully that we can get something worked out from that.
Sounds
you
good.
Will.
I think you will too. Yeah, that sounds good, Daisy.
This one wasn't just one admit for me. One admit to join a party.
Not yet. Not yet. You will. In phase two, for sure. So Gary, how do you manage the balance between the benefits and the risk of getting into a clinical trial? I mean, I never thought about getting my advanced directives and will and stuff done until this surgery is coming up. Right? So any brain surgery is a major surgery, no matter if it's two small holes in the brain with a little tube snaking around your brain. But, you know, how do you weigh the risk of that for a clinical trial?
Well, I was kind of looking at it from the perspective of, you know, thinking about my life, the way it was going to probably end up, you know, just looking at the numbers and the stats for this disease. And I thought, you know, I might as well just try something as big as I can find. Yeah. And this looked pretty interesting too. You know, we were talking about some of the trials before that they've done, you know, in different animals and that sort of thing and how well those work. So hopefully that will work for me too. We'll see.
Yeah, there was another trial even done the same thing, but it had no placebo, which is frowned upon in medical field, but they had a success rate of 50-60% normal.
Yep.
But with no placebo, medical profession did not accept that at all. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah, it really does. I wish they didn't have placebo either, you know, just because it's kind of annoying to think about that.
You know, I wish they didn't too, but I still, even if I got the placebo, I would not be mad, because there has to be one, because we make stuff up sometimes in our brains. We think things that aren't true. And, you know, it's one of those, you know, it's just like science and astrophysics and space and stuff. You got to have
mind facts. Over matter.
Well, you got to have matter. You got to have the facts first too. But yeah, you got to have that repeated success. Knowing this surgery you went into, Gary, brain surgery, not good for MSA, we're already in a bad state. Were you, this is a very sensitive question, I guess, but are you scared to die because of the surgery?
Not really. I am. I've got a pretty strong faith, you know, with my, I'm a Christian and everything. That helps me get through all this stuff. It really does. I wasn't really worried about dying, really. And, you know, I was kind of actually thinking, if I did, at least I wouldn't have to go through this stuff anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one thing I was kind of looking at. So, but I know what you're saying. That's a big question.
What about you, David?
I said it repeatedly. The least thing I'm afraid of is death. Like Gary says, it's going to happen. It's going to happen whether we want to or not. So I'd rather go out swinging, you know, for the stands, than let it take its own course, you know.
Yeah. And this is kind of off track, but that's kind of how I feel about the right to try. You know, if without this, we're gonna MSA's terminal, so we don't have a big chance of getting through it without any kind of thing.
You have zero chance of getting through it. Those are the facts with MSA.
Right, but if we have right to die in California, you know, you have assisted suicide for terminal people, so why can't we have the right to try the drugs?
Is his name Jack Kevorkian or something? That guy that was world renowned for assisted suicide?
Yeah, that's the guy.
But, I mean, seriously, and I'm thinking Trump for, you know, giving us that right to try, because he did sign, I researched this, and in 2018, he signed a bill to have right to try. And so it is in 38 or 40 states now.
Well, 41, I read the one you sent. Yeah, 41. Yeah.
So I have a right to try this TAC 341.
Yeah, you just said your primary doctor overseeing it has to administer and oversee it the entire time. I was reading that he just can't give it to you, but he has to be the main person that watches you and administers it and follows up. And I'm not too sure too many doctors, I'm sure yours would, but I'm not too sure how many doctors would take that risk, you know, but the liability, there's got to be something that makes them hesitant to do that.
He put it in through Takeda. He put it in the email to give me a rat to try.
Oh, see, there you go. We're moving on up. You're going to get those better treatments than what Gary and I are going to get.
Oh, I don't know. We'll you're see.
Going to get a Poonman replacement. Not sure that's possible. Anyway, Gary.
sorry to get off track.
It's all right.
Gary, how has your clinical team been in supporting you and guiding you through this entire process?
They've definitely been there for any questions that I would have. They always encourage me to ask as many questions as I can think of, you know, so they've been pretty good about that. Both of them, the ones at Ohio State and the ones up at, you know, Detroit. So yeah, I really like them. They're awesome folks to work with.
I just got my first call from Ohio State this morning. So that's how far they moved on. A whole bunch of stuff was incorrect, addresses and whatever. But yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised that I email for my results like every day. I'm impatient because these results mean a lot to me, both in myself, but YouTube and seeing progression. These are free tests, you know.
They were talking about too the other day.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very happy to ask Bio, man. They are absolutely on top of it, and they answer at any time of the day, the weekends, vacation. They're great people.
Yep. I noticed that too. I'll call them after hours frequently, and I'll get somebody on the phone usually. So yeah, that's important to have that kind of support out there, especially when you don't know what you're doing, you know.
Or at Quest, though. It was Quest. I was talking about you the other day, dude.
Yeah, Quest Diagnostics.
I was talking to Marcy, I think it was. She was talking about you. So I'm sorry I've been taking so long on your reimbursement, but I'm trying to get a patient ready for surgery in January. I know that patient.
He's a hard-headed guy. He keeps asking for his dad scan every single morning.
Yeah, I had to do the same thing. I got copies of all my scans and everything, so I'm like,
Could I ask you what your dad scan showed?
It was, you know, it showed just sort of a positive, you know, for the MSA.
So reduce activity on your Poudaman or call date?
Yep. I believe that's right. Yeah.
What did your lumbar puncture show? Anything?
I don't recall that one, but I'm sure all of them were like, you know, they were all positive for some, you know, something. And, you know, they were all positive. So, yeah, I don't recall that one exactly. Sorry.
I've never seen a result from a lumbar puncture. This would be the first time I'll actually look for that result. Yeah, that's interesting. What they look for?
Yeah, I'm curious about that one.
I know there's other genetic ways they can test for misfolding alpha-synuclein protein and clumps of iron, which is what that practically is, through either skin biopsies, muscle biopsies, in the gut, and lumbar punctures and things like that. So I think that's what they're doing with lumbar punctures, or testing for the alpha-synuclein misfolding protein down there too.
I took the SN1 test as well, you know, which takes three different, you know, punctures from your body. It was like the first time my neurologist had ever given that test. It was kind of funny. He was just a little bit nervous about it, I think, you know.
The biopsy?
Yeah. The biopsy, yeah. So he did that, and that came back positive as well. That was how he kind of decided it was, you know, it was MSA-P instead of something else. So one of the things that he used, at least, was that, you know, for his decision.
Yeah. That's crazy how every doctor does things completely differently, not only the order, the process, but the test. I mean, Daisy has had the least amount of testing, specific ones. You had twice as much as I have, and I'm here in the middle, but we all have had different tests. So it's very interesting how these doctors are able to conclude that, you know, MSA with different amounts of testing.
Yeah, I'd asked Dr. Toff, he could give me a skin biopsy. He said, there's no need.
Right.
It's just a waste of money of insurance.
Gary, knowing what you know now after clinical trial of a few weeks, would you do it again?
Absolutely would, yes. Yeah, I would.
I've asked that a few times.
I've had a couple surgeries where I'm like, I would never do this again. But, you know, this is one of those, it's like, would you?
Yeah, good. We do it again for sure.
What advice, Gary, would you give others for other persons with MSA that are considering either not having any other treatments like clinical trials, exploratory surgeries, practically what these are, treatments, or having them, what would be your advice, having gone through it yourself?
I would tell them that this is something that's a very serious decision. They have to really think about it and pray about it, you know, if they're believers. So I would definitely say that, you know, spend your time thinking about it and praying about it and see what you need to do, because it's really, to me, it just seemed like the only option that I had, you know, at the time. So I haven't seen anything else out there that looks like it could have this significant of a difference on me, you know.
So
I would just say, think about it. And then also, you were talking about getting your wills and everything ready. You know, I did that too before I went up for my surgery as well. That's a good thing to go and get all that stuff taken care of, so that you know your spouse is going to be taken care of or whatever, and then, you know, that way you don't have to think about it, you know, if something happens to you. So
Jerry's a really good support person. He was texting me while I was up there in Michigan in Quest doing my evaluation. He gave me a really good scripture. I can't remember which one it was now, but he had me just, you know, keep repeating in my head the whole time, and it stuck with me then. But yeah, you were very, very good and very supportive, Derek. Gary, I appreciate that.
No problem.
And Gary, for the record, your symptoms began early 2021, more or less, or give or take around April. Your first neurologist appointment, I believe the movement disorder one, was December of 21. So about half a year later, and then you're diagnosed in April of 22. So literally you went from symptoms to full diagnosis in more or less a year.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing compared to what I hear from a lot of people out there that go through this and they get diagnosed, you know, by different people for different things. It's one of the most frustrating things about this. Even with my diagnosis, I asked my surgeon the other day about, you know, some of the things that are out there that just look similar to MSA, you know. He assured me that that's not it, you know, it's just MSA, and that's what his diagnosis is. I feel comfortable with that, but I just want to make sure, you know, I always want to check things out and make sure that whatever I'm dealing with, I know that it's the correct thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Before the surgery, how active were you right before the surgery? Like, I mean, I still try to fix my cars. I try to play darts, like computer games. I don't try to go running and jogging anymore. Yeah. I learned my lesson on that one. How active were you? At what stage were you in this progression of MSA? Were you still walking, still jogging, mm-hmm. still riding, still working?
I'm still walking now. I can still walk, although I do have some mobility issues, you know, but I'm still walking. I'm still driving as well. So that's a good thing. My wife doesn't like me to drive, of course, you know, but that's okay. Because, you know, if I can't drive, I'll tell her I can't drive. Or whatever. Yeah. I'll feel really bad one day. I just won't do it, you know. But you know, I was pretty active, I'd say, you know, relatively speaking. But, you know, I could definitely tell that I was slowing down for sure, you know, with the mobility issues before.
He went to Michigan by himself, David.
Yeah, I've been there by myself a few times, too. That's wonderful.
What are y'all? Yeah. It's crazy. Hey. Flying by himself.
You get some knucklehead men, man. We'll do some foolish things from time to time.
For sure. They're stubborn.
Well, you know.
So we go back. We get the hotel room all to ourselves, you know. Not to share with anybody.
That's right.
True, but I was worried about him when he was by himself. I was like, did you make it back?
Well, you know, they have you can get in the wheelchair thingy at the airports, which makes a big difference for me. That's awesome. I love that, you know. Plus now I have a handicap parking sticker too, which is another benefit of this thing. That's really an awesome thing for me to have that, because I can park wherever I want. Usually I don't have to worry about it, which is nice. But, you know, I did have my wife went up with me for a couple of those trips, you know, before. And then my son went with me on a couple of them afterwards as well. So, you know, I do have my son, and my wife are always pretty eager to help me out if they can.
How do they, what's their mindset on this whole ordeal that you're going through?
I don't think they really understand just how bad I feel. You know, that's one thing I try to, you know, I try to keep from people, even my family. I just don't want them to know how bad I feel all the time. But sometimes I'll just tell them, you know, look, I just feel like crap today. I can't do anything. I'm sorry. or whatever it might be. And just, you know, I think they're kind of getting a sense for it. Also, after my fall, my wife, you know, that kind of freaked her out a little bit, you know, so I think she believes now that this is just, you know, it's all happening right, and it's just not going to be easy for me. So, plus, I spill my coffee all the time, you know.
Yeah, that is the, Gary, thank you. That is the hardest thing to do, is to get coffee.
Yeah.
And go walk to your living room to sit down or something, and to hold that thing level and shuffle your feet properly with it. That is the God's honest hardest thing to do for me to do.
It really is. I always had a problem spilling coffee anyway, you know, beforehand. So, yeah, it was always a coffee spiller, but now it's just like 10 times worse or something. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Do you have any, or do you participate in any support groups, albeit religious or professional or medical, anything like that?
I'm on the board of directors for the MSA Coalition, which is a, you know.
Oh, that was recent, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've been on there just at 1 year in January or December. It's coming. Yeah, it's coming.
Congratulations. How's that going?
It's really a great organization. They're awesome people, and they really know what they're doing, too. You know, they're very considerate of people that are going through this, and this like their primary mission, you know. So it's really a cool place to be, I think. I really like it.
And which group was that again that you're part of?
MSA Coalition.
I'm an idiot. I know there's two, and I still, my brain does not separate the two.
Coalition and Alliance.
Yeah, Alliance and Coalition, right. Gary, where is your happy place in all of this? Where do you go to cope when you have to? Well, that doesn't have to be a physical place, by the way.
Sure. I'm at home most of the time now, you know, so that's I'm always here, which is okay. But, you know, I know that Jesus is like a real thing. He's like a real person. And so he helps me with everything that I need help with. I'm not kidding you. It's just amazing to me how that relationship has grown so much over the last few months, you know. But that's kind of where I go in my head, I guess, you know, when I start thinking bad things or whatever, and just, you know, kind of feel bad or whatever. I always pray, you know, that he'll help me with that and help me get through it.
Have him pull you out of that dark place that you're in.
He really does. Yeah, that's an awesome thing about, you know, having that relationship there. So that's usually what I do.
I have to say my relationship has grown too, Gary. I think it's really helpful for when we get in those lows.
Yep, it does. Yep, it does.
I think that's a song on MTV. Not the lows.
I don't know about that.
No? Okay.
I don't either. He's over there in his own space.
Talk about brain fog, absolutely. Gary, where do you go from here? I mean, obviously, get out of this anesthesia funk and stuff like that, but... What are your future aspirations and goals and the direction you're looking to move into?
Well, I do have a bucket list, so I'm kind of working through that. Ooh. Right now.
Can we hear a couple?
Sure. The one thing I'm going to in January, I'm going to an island called Palau. It's in the Indian Ocean. And I'm going with a buddy of mine who's a big diver, and we're going to dive a little bit out there. So I'm really looking
forward to that. Oh, how fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a blast, I think.
I bet so. I want to go.
Right,
go get a ticket and everything. You got it's like a 20-something-hour flight or something. It's crazy.
Oh, just the flight's gonna wear you out.
Yeah, I think it will, but that's okay. I'm ready to go. You know,
that's all you can.
So I'm working through that list, you know, of things that I wanted. That's really the main thing I wanted to do, you know, before I left this earth, you know. And so also I'm trying to spend as much time as I can with my kids and my wife, you know, and my friends and everything. So that's really important to me, obviously, as well.
Yeah, I had one bucket list. I wanted to go on the island. I love islands and looking at sunrises and sunsets. And I told my mother about it. And she says, you know, last year she's like, I'll do one better. We'll go to Europe and do all that. And we took like almost 3 weeks all around Europe, a cruise and then going around the continent. And yeah, that's, you know, bucket lists are... Like a list are there for family and friends and, you know, enjoyment, but they're also there for something to look forward to, because
absolutely,
it's very easy to lose track of oneself if you have nothing to look forward to, especially having this ungodly disease that we have, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to take my wife someplace too. I just hadn't decided where. So we're going to go probably down to the Caribbean or something like that. I think she'd really enjoy that. You know, it's a beautiful place too, down through there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's a lot of storms out there. A cruise got canceled. Instead of going to the Bahamas, it went up to Boston in Canada.
Not the same, but
What a
what the
detour.
world
Yeah,
even compares?
what a detour that was.
Wow.
Gary, anything else you'd like to add? I know appear to be a man of faith in scripture. Anything else you want to add about MSA, clinical trial, family, faith, work, anything?
I just say to people, you know, just don't kick yourself in the rear end because of the way you feel, because you can't help that really. And just kind of, you know, try to keep your attitude straight, you know, keep your head straight and focus on what you're doing, you know, because I have to focus on everything I'm doing at that time, you know. So like for example, I have to focus on walking now, you know. And I can't just go up and do stuff like I used to, or if I bend over to pick something up, I have to be very careful about doing that too.
It's awful for somebody that used to multitask.
Yeah, if I was like that, I did everything, you know, around the house and
I can't even hold my phone and be walking assisted anymore.
it's hard anymore. Yeah, I can't even text and drive anymore. I shouldn't say that,
Yeah, right.
Gary, let me ask you one last question. And I think I'm going to ask this from now on for those that have MSA. Do you have any idea or thoughts about how MSA started with you in your case? The causality?
I really don't. I mean, they're saying that they don't know of any causes for it, except maybe some, you know, they're saying maybe there's maybe some genetic effects that they're just not aware of yet. There may be some other thing, you know, like maybe people got into some, I don't know, some kind of chemicals or something, or maybe it had to do with your diet or whatever. I can't
Yep.
really, I
I
can't
have
really.
my thoughts. I think it's from multiple concussions.
Ah, I follow you there. Yeah.
Or major TBIs. I've had traumatic brain injury and several concussions. And Gary, didn't you say you had a few concussions too?
No, I only had one when I was a little kid. That's the only one I know of. You know, I threw up immediately afterwards, and I didn't remember anything that happened for probably the next 15 or 20 minutes. So that I know that was a concussion, you know. But other
Yeah.
than that, I really haven't had any. I haven't had any brain issues or head issues that I'm aware of.
When I first had my first symptoms of my feet not moving properly, both of them, 4 days before that, I fell in my shower and hit my head and blacked out.
Wow.
4 days. And then here comes this thing. So, yeah, there's a lot of research that says there's no relation to smoking and TBI, traumatic brain injuries, and things like that. I suppose Mayo Clinic has a bunch of those on there. But I don't know. It seems pretty fishy from time to time.
Right.
You know, they say that nicotine actually has been researched a little bit. And it's supposed to be helpful for people that have had Parkinson's, you know, disease and stuff like that. So that's kind of interesting, I think. You know, I just happened on that study one time. I'll shoot it to you if you're interested. So
That is bit good for it.
it's supposed to be people that have smoked all their lives have significantly lower instances of Parkinson's than other people for the same, you know, for the same lifestyles, et cetera.
Well, we gotta start smoking, Daisy.
I've been smoking lately.
Can't smoke, Daisy. How horrible.
No, just one or two a day.
She's not smoking nicotine, though, right?
They have those Zen pouches, which are like 6 milligrams of nicotine. You can take those if you really want to. So.
I've been having the after dinner cigarette every day for a couple weeks.
Hey, with MSA, you're entitled to it, Daisy.
That's
Absolutely.
what I said. I
I'm
think I'm
entitled
about drinking wine now too.
to it. So you're talking about my still drinking liquor, and the doctors don't like that. But you know what? If I'm going out, I'm not giving up liquor. Like, come on, man. I gotta have something.
What's funny is I had a couple glasses of wine the other day, and it was just like, you know, I think, you know, with the mobility issues, and then the wine kicked in too, and I was just like, whoa,
It's
that's pretty
a gut
damn.
punch. It's a gut punch, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
It's horrible. And the one thing, the other thing is, You're sending the stuff you talk about, just like the timelines lines up with mine and mine with yours. Other thing I'll say is, yeah, getting over, not a hangover, but getting over drinking takes so much longer and amplifies the MSD already drunken part of the cerebellum. You know, have you ever noticed that when you have something serious, like you said, when you hit your head, maybe a bad argument, maybe you had a car accident, a balloon popped right beside you and scared you to death. Have you noticed that those really spontaneous, aggressive situations make your symptoms worse? Like it takes a percentage off of your already progressive MSA?
I don't know if it works like that for me or not, really. I can't really tell. So I'd just say I don't know about that one. That's interesting. I'll have to think about that a little bit.
Yeah, I noticed when I had those situations, like I got in a car accident, somebody hit my work truck a few months ago, and man, it took a percentage off of me. It's like I don't recover. I had a kidney infection, which almost killed me, and it hurt so bad. But even after that, it took a percentage off me. I didn't go back to where I was normal, whatever normal was at the time. It's those catastrophic events just seem to be knocking me down. But now I'm not afraid of progressing with MSA. I'm afraid of those big time events that are going to take a large chunk of my usefulness off, you know, because of them. So,
and that must have been what happened to me with the anesthetics that I took or something.
That's mm-hmm.
Thank you. Well, Gary, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with David and I. It's been really nice having you on and getting some information about the clinical trial. And I want to wish y'all both a Merry Christmas and tell our listeners thank you for listening to our show and keeping us going, because we wouldn't be here without y'all. So.
Yeah, and the comments and feedback we get on the podcast, on the Spotify and Podbean, we get a lot of questions and comments and positive feedback. So we definitely appreciate that.
Yes, for real. Thank you all.
Well, I just want to thank you guys again for doing all you do with this thing, you know, that is so difficult to deal with. You know, we're just both so professional, so good at this. I'm just so grateful that y'all are here to do this. This is awesome.
Oh, I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you.
Can we have you back at some point, Gary, down the road? Touch base on the clinical and how you're doing?
Yeah, I want to see. I'm going to keep up with you anyways, but I want you to come on the show and keep the MSA Crusaders up to date on what's going on with you.
Okay, that sounds great. I'd love to do that. It'd be fun.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, Gary.
Y'all take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.